Okay, so this is exciting, isn't it? We've got so many lovely things to look forward to. One of them is Eunice. Now, Eunice is the founder of EA Consult, and she's been working with teams, individuals and organisations to help them navigate change through thematic coaching and just sort of changing how they show up, helping them tune into themselves so they can really bring about transformation. And she's sort of one of the pioneers in the UK of thematic coaching. She's been writing and researching huge amounts. Her book, which is excellent, is out now, Embodying Authenticity. So I think we're going to have a wonderful session. And without further ado, I would like to welcome Dr. Eunice Aquilina.
So good morning, everyone. When you look at those images on the screen, what do you see? Maybe you see people sitting, having a conversation, reflecting with each other. Maybe you're drawn to the expressions on their faces. Some people were smiling. Some people were laughing. Others looked very serious as they were concentrating. When I look at people, when I work with people, when I go into an organization or when I meet a client for the first time, what I pay attention to is shape. What is the shape that they embody? As a somatic practitioner, that's where I'm drawing my attention to. This shape, this body that we have, is the structure that embodies our history and our experience. And this structure informs how we show up on a day-to-day basis. And that is what I want to talk to you about today, about shape. And how by bringing our attention to our shape, to our body, we can begin to pay attention to how we are being, how we are taking action, how we're interacting with people, and we can shift our shape in order to show up differently. Why is that important? Well, we heard Liz say already, last year you talked about VUCA. This world is changing. Change is changing. And as a result of that, we need to also pay attention to how we're showing up too, which means an equal focus on how we're being as coaches, as consultants, as facilitators, as leaders, as well as what we're doing. So it's shifting our attention, not just to what tools or techniques do I have, but actually, what is it that I need to cultivate in myself in order to navigate? And I use that word quite deliberately. Think of the explorers of old who set off absolutely uncertain, not knowing what they were going to find. They had to learn to navigate the waters in order for them to be able to find whatever they were looking for at the end. And that's what we need to become, really skilled navigators of emergence. So, as I've already said, as humans, we embody our history. We embody our history over time. And throughout our lives, we are developing strategies to do two things. One is to keep us safe, and the other is to have us feel that we belong. And we develop those strategies in a way that then shows up in our body. So some people, myself included, keep ourselves small, narrow, contracted. Maybe that has us withdraw. Others of us, our energy's up and we're focusing forward. And we're wanting to challenge, to engage, to be in conversation. Not right or wrong, just different. But we can see that in our body. We can observe ourselves actually in our body. And this shape that we embody predisposes us to certain action. It predisposes us to see the world in a certain way. It predisposes us to engage with people in a certain way. So if I think about myself, keeping myself narrow, the thought of standing on stage talking to 150 people would freak the hell out of me. But now, through the work I've done, I can stand and go, no, I can do this. I can take up more space, I can shift my shape, and I can be different in the world. So try this with me. Whatever you've got on your laps, just put them down. And what I want you to do is I want you to frown. I know it's a lovely first part of the day, but now frown. Tighten all of the muscles in your face. Tighten your jaw. Let your shoulders come up to your ears. Tighten your stomach muscles. Now turn to the person next to you and say, I'm really happy. So we embody a shape of, I'm feeling angry, I'm frowning, I'm anxious, whatever. And then we try to say something that's completely contradictory, and our bodies can't do that. So the work that I do is to start to work with people, not through their heads, but actually through their body. And in order to do that, the first thing we need to learn to do is to, a bit like Liz did this morning with us, is to get out of here and move into here. For most of us, here is the most comfortable place to be. And we can think that we're connecting with our body, but actually turning this on mute and allowing ourselves to go down here takes time. And in my experience, for most people, takes time. So let's do that together. Just wherever you are, don't adjust anything. Don't change how you're sitting, how you're being. Just stay exactly as you are. Almost freeze, as if you're freeze framing. And notice, where's your breath? How are you breathing? And I know in through the nose and out through the mouth, but how are you breathing? Just notice how you're breathing. Are your feet on the floor? Is your back in the chair? Or are you leaning forward? Are your shoulders slumped? Or are you feeling upright? So as you tuned into yourself, what you may have noticed was, oh, my breath is high and shallow, or low and rhythmic. My shoulders are tight up around my ears. I'm sitting on the edge of my chair in anticipation. Whatever it was for you, again, no judgment, just be curious about that. And is that a familiar shape to you? Is that something that you recognize as, oh yeah, I'm often sitting on the edge of my chair? Take a minute, turn to the person next to you and just share, what did you notice? What did you notice with your partner? It's a great bell, Stephen. It's a great bell. So the wisdom of the body is an unexplored resource in Western culture. You know, so very often, quite understandably, we feel more relaxed working from this space, working from our head. And it's a journey to travel in and to part to pay attention to, how are we holding ourselves? How am I connecting to my livingness? The aliveness, the energy that's running through me quite naturally. For when we do, when we touch into our livingness, we touch into our authentic self. And as coaches, it enables us to have a more powerful conversation. We have tools, we have techniques, and all of those are really powerful for sure. But actually, it's about having a human conversation with somebody and touching into their humanity. But I didn't always see shape, or indeed have a sense of the power of what it means to work through the body. I spent 25 years working inside organisations, most of those in the field of leadership and organisational development. And I ran my life safe in the knowledge of the guardianship of my mind. And the last 10 years, I worked at the BBC and was privileged to be part of the culture change programme called Making It Happen. It was a real innovative change program that, in fact, was written about in HBR and written about in OD books. In fact, I think it's a chapter in one of the OD textbooks. And for sure, we did some really innovative change work. we engage the 26,000 employees in a conversation about how did they want this organisation to be and what did they need to be different in order to realise that ambition. We engage not just them in the conversation, but we engage them in actually doing something different. It was a very powerful programme. And then something happened. What happened was, and it started with a broadcast on Radio 4 and ended with the resignation of the Director General. And that whole event, what the organisation did, was just like a rubber band. You know, when you stretch a rubber band, when you let go, it goes back to its original shape. And that's exactly what happened in the BBC. When the pressure mounted, when the external environment changed so dramatically, the organisation, just like a rubber band, contracted again. And at the time, I didn't know this, but of course, now I understand that if we don't pay attention to our shape, what we're doing is we're layering on top new skills, new tools, new ways of having new models, but the shape is still the same. So when the pressure happens, what happens for us is that actually we end up going back to our original shape. For me at the time, it made me question and get really curious about what's going on here. We've done some really good work. We saw the change happening. Behaviour change was happening. We had coaching conversations going on across the organisation. So what was going on? And it set me off on an inquiry into myself around who do I need to be in order to more effectively navigate this space? How come I didn't notice that the external environment was going to have such an impact? How come none of us noticed? How come none of us paid attention? And how could I skill myself in a way that I could pay more attention? And that took me on a lifelong journey, which continues to this day, and where I discovered embodied learning, call it somatics, which works directly through the body, and where I experienced that I could create change for myself and, more importantly, sustain that change. So in the heat of the kitchen, when the pressure was on, I could still take new action. And for the last 11 years, I've been working with organisations and individual clients, coaching clients. I've been working with teams and I've been working with leadership communities. And I started to notice that just in the same way, they too were having the sustained change that I had experienced myself. And so I decided to do some research, partly to write the book, but also partly because I wanted to get, okay, so what's actually happening? What's going on here? And I want to say a little bit about the research, just to say, using an action research methodology, I engaged with approximately 60 plus leaders and practitioners. And all of those had been introduced to embodied learning. All of them had tuned into what's going on below their neck. All of them worked either with an organisation or they worked inside an organisation. And all had real complex environments to navigate. All were facing a volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous environment that they had to navigate. And so they were dealing with challenge every single day. Through the stories that we gained from them, and many of them are in the book, what was revealed was a number of things. That by tuning into ourselves and paying attention to who we're being, they could lead from purpose. Not just a purpose that's articulated as a set of words, but something that is really grounded inside, something that has a felt sense of who you are. They could build trust with each other. Trust lives in the body as a felt sense. It's not something that we tick off a list and go, oh, we've now got trust. It's something that we feel and make an assessment about constantly. and they found they were able to build trust with each other. They could collaborate more effectively, partly because they were getting themselves present, but also because they were listening more deeply to what was the concerns of people and really listening into what each person wanted, which meant they could leverage the collective, which in an environment that is emergent is really important. How do you leverage the collective? They also started to be able to embrace conflict, not as something to be avoided, which tended to be my shape, or something to, great, I've got a good fight to get into now, but rather, actually, here's an opportunity for something different. Inside of the conflict, new possibilities can emerge. And because of the work they did on themselves, they were able to mobilize others to action. So rather than take my word for it, let me share with you some stories from the book. And the first one I want to share is from a team we worked with at Swarovski, people who make the jewelry. And Swarovski is a family-run business. It's headquartered in Switzerland. And that the culture of that business has evolved over time. But predominantly, it is a culture that is paternalistic, overly taking care, and quite authoritative, actually. And just imagine that you are this senior team who, in that culture of very paternalistic, very authoritative, very overly taking care, that you, the way, that which informs the way you operate with each other, that you suddenly find yourself needing to implement a new strategy. They had spent a year working in a closed room, devising this strategy. They wanted to change the way that they operated to be more agile and more adaptive to the changing environment. And they'd got a beautiful written strategy. But the move from taking it from what they had developed to actually helping the organization to take this on board was a big distance. Because when they looked at themselves, they were conflict averse. When they looked at themselves, they found themselves not wanting to be in the conversations that you needed to be in. And when they looked at themselves, they didn't want to. They didn't feel they had the capacity to engage people and really take them on board. If we just tell them, they'll do it, won't they? Which is where we came in. So we came in to do some team coaching with this particular group of people. And when we arrived with them, they showed up all of those behaviours that we saw. From our perspective, we hold that awareness doesn't change behaviour. Thinking our way ourselves different doesn't change behaviour either. If we could think ourselves different, we would have done that by now. So when we work with a team or an individual or a group, we bring the body in very early on. And we invite them to work and learn through the body. So with this particular group, a number of different things we did, but one of the things we got them to do was to start to learn how to center themselves. So in the moment of feeling grabbed, they could reorganize their system and get really present, not just to themselves, but to each other. They could bring that presence in the way in which they had conversations. So they had began to have real conversations with each other, not just passing information from each other. And then we got them actually moving together, physically moving together, in a way that they could feel their centered presence, but they could also feel the connection with other people, not as a mind thing, but as a felt sense. And as they moved together in a particular practice, what was happening, their nervous system started to sync up. They started to get a deeper sense of each other, and their psychobiology shifted. As a result, they became more connected with each other, and they became more connected with what the organization needed from them. But don't take my word for it. Let's hear a very small clip from a lady called Alison Lazarowitz, who you'll see there with the scarf around her neck. second one in. She is the vice president and general counsel for the organisation. And she very kindly, allowed me to use their photographs, but also very kindly said that she would say a few words just to bring it to life from the client's perspective. So let's hear. I apologise in advance. These were all done as I've got a couple more videos, and they were all done remotely. So sometimes you might see the words going out of sync.
Back at the time at Swarovski, what the first thing we did as an executive team was to get a glimpse of what the power of the collective was. I think we had a blind spot about what power we had together. Once we figured out that there was a way to be different together, we started to focus on individually how we were being as individual leaders and then as a team. Once we got that figured out, the power that we had together to create something that allowed others to join the organization or join the journey with us became more powerful than we ever thought and really allowed us to go from individual beings to a collective force.
So, as she said there, the work they did, exactly that, allowed them from going from a group of individuals to a collective force. For them, it required courage, real courage, to step out of their historical shape, their comfort zone, their way of operating, and really embrace something radically different. But as a result of that, what occurred for them was that they began to embody an authentic leadership presence. They cultivated trust with each other first and foremost, but then with the wider group that they engage with. And that became the real foundation for them in leading this emergent change. Interestingly, the group itself, there were 100 plus leaders from across the globe. They not only engaged with this new strategy, but they embraced it wholeheartedly. They'd won their hearts and minds simply by the way they were being. And as a result, they embraced it, they made it their own, and rolled it out 4 months ahead of schedule. So back to what I said earlier, it's about who we're being as we navigate some of these challenges, not just what we're doing. So that's a team we worked with. I want to talk a little bit about an individual. And I'm very conscious that the person I'm going to talk about is in the room. And I'm sure as I talk about her story, if questions come up for you, I'm sure she'll be more than happy, I hope she will be, to answer those questions. So just as you're sitting in your seat, just imagine. You're the HR director. Let yourself just imagine that you're the HR director. Your company has been on the front page of the news for weeks. In fact, it's probably the first item on the news bulletin every evening. Why? For unethical behaviour. Cameras are poised outside of your front door. This has resulted in the immediate closure of one of your core products, resulting in 500 people being made redundant overnight. Your chairman and his son have been publicly questioned by a parliamentary committee. Imagine just in this moment how you might feel as the HR director of such an organisation. What might happen in your body? How might it contract? What emotions might be present for you? What might you notice? Well, Carrie, who was that HR director, recognised that this was not a head problem. Records from the organisation had been given to the police, and the police were now going to start raiding employees' homes. Something different had to happen. And as an employee, Carrie experienced her own sense of shame, her own sense of fear, and her own sense of vulnerability. And she also recognised that The shame, the fear, the vulnerability was shaping how she was showing up with her managers and with the people. And she knew she needed to do something about that. So she and I worked together. We were in a coaching relationship, and she and I worked together. And again, thank you for your permission for letting me share this. And in our coaching work, we began to explore, what is the shape of fear in your body? What is the shape of vulnerability? What is the shape of shame? How does that live? What's its structure? What happens to your musculature when you feel afraid, when you feel vulnerable, when you feel ashamed? Really helping Carrie get familiar with that shape, so that not to ignore it or push it to one side, but to actually get really familiar with it in a way she could acknowledge it, and at the same time, she could center herself. She could center herself and get herself really present to what needed to happen, acknowledging her own emotions, but reorganizing herself in the moment. Here's my fear, I can feel it, I know the structure of it, and I can reorganize myself and I can show up differently. So let's hear from Carrie.
I was HR director for News UK for 10 turbulent years. For me, somatics helped me stay in touch with the emotions of being an employee in that situation. The shame, the vulnerability, and the fear, and allowing that to guide communications, to avoid the temptation to say that it'll be over soon and we'll be back to business as usual. Somatics helped me to firmly insist with managers that they talk to their staff about how they felt so it was okay for them to do it. We know how dangerous unspoken feelings can be for organisations in these situations. And somatics helped me accept how unpredictable things were and how things needed to be dealt with as they unfolded.
So what the work helped her to do was not focus on what she needed to do. She knew what she needed to do. She had enough lawyers and PR people all over what was occurring to ensure that the tasks that they were doing were the right things. What she needed to do was to focus on herself. And what this enabled was her to harness that warrior spirit that allowed her to work through this highly volatile situation, but still show up with compassion and care. My final story is from Eon. We worked with leaders across the organisation. But rather than me tell you the story, let me ask Stephen King, who was at the time the head of learning, leadership and development, and let him share with you what the situation was and what we did.
Hello, thanks Eunice for this opportunity to talk about my chapter in your book. I guess I'd like to start by saying, you know, the organization I was working for then, Eon, was a global organization in highly competitive energy markets with a customer base that was changing incredibly fast. You know, people could get up in the morning and switch their energy supplier. And it had a lot of history, Eon, around how it was conducting its leadership development. Pretty much very traditional, very classroom-based, very high quality, but a very 20th century model in terms of looking at leadership from some academic perspectives, some logical perspectives, and some change perspectives. And I guess my experience of the whole somatic approach helped me to rethink and pause and reflect on what are we really doing here, given that our markets are changing, our customers are changing, our employees' expectations were changing too. And a lot of our leadership and some of our management development wasn't actually changing. So I took an enormous decision at what I felt like at the time at the top of the RWI building in Dusseldorf, kind of looking out on the skyline, having a conversation with myself, which was really about saying, okay, A, do I need permission to bring in a different way of thinking, a different way of being, some new challenges? And secondly, how much risk was I up for? Well, I took that decision and decided actually we could take a stand. So I took a stand. And how I chose to go about that was by essentially lighting fires in different parts of the organization. So people who were interested, motivated, curious, and perhaps of a similar mind to some degree, we got those people together, we started doing some of their work, and you know, before we realized it, many people were starting to enrol with us in different countries, very particularly in the UK. We enrolled the HR community into that work, which was quite successful. And I guess throughout all of that process, the different learning journeys were incredible, very continuous in many ways. And of course, my own learning journey continued also. So I became more encouraged, certainly more confident, more risk-taking. And over the course of 2 years, we really started to build a strong community that was looking totally at how it wanted to be, how it wanted to show up at work, how we could be respectful to approaches from the past, but embrace different ways of thinking, different ways of being, different ways of relating to each other, all in the service of helping some amazing customers and some brilliantly talented employees. Now, if there was one thing I learned about that is that, you know, that for me, real change occurs in that moment-to-moment interactions between people. That's where the cultural change, I think, really occurs. It's where that kind of reactions and intentions play out between people. And it's my most significant learning. And by focusing and paying attention to what is going on in the moment, there's you can take new actions, you can get new learning, and you can continue to evolve both your leadership and your practice, because you're getting not just real-time feedback, but you're getting real-time experience. And that stood me in good stead since I left that job and came into this new one, where I continue to practice as a senior leader and continue to look at how we bring the field of organizational development much closer to somatics. And I think that's the next step of the journey. But I'll pause there because you may have some questions, but Eunice, thanks for the opportunity.
So working with these groups of leaders across the organization, we got them into practices, just in the same way as we worked with all the others, and they would practice together. You can see them here practicing with a Jo staff. It's a Japanese wooden staff that helps them start to notice in real time their habitual patterns. And because if we start to pay attention to what we're practicing and we shift what we're practicing, we enable ourselves to show up differently. So as a result of the work of the research that I did, I identified that the people that we worked with went on this journey of awakening, waking up to the life of the body, of transforming, shifting habitual patterns of behavior, and empowering themselves to have more choice and to have more ways of operating. And the practices that people seemed to return to over and over again was the practice of tuning into what's going on below the neck. Really paying attention to the sensations that I feel. Embodying purpose, not as a articulation of it, but as a deeply felt, this is what really matters to me, this is what I care about, sense. Interrupting those habitual patterns, as we heard Carrie talk about. Recognizing my mood and how my mood is shaping how I'm showing up. Yeah, navigating that space. And having a centered presence, so that I'm present not just to myself, but to others, and open to possibility. So we only have to look back at the last few weeks, the last few months in this country, to know that the world is a very troubled space. And so my invitation to you is, what would it take for you to show up in your humanity? What does it mean that you need to reorganize in yourself to show up? Because if you have the courage to show up in your humanity, you will invite others to do the same. So just in these last couple of minutes, just turn to the person next to you and just take a moment to just share what struck you by what I've talked about today. Just take a minute or two with the person next to you. So I just want to close by saying thank you and offer you an invitation. You are now going to move to other sessions. You're going to hear other speakers. You're going to have a rich day of real information and stuff that coming at you that you can find useful and juicy. In the midst of your day, as you travel, take a moment and just tune into what's happening in my body. Where's my breath? Where am I noticing myself contracting? Are my feet on the floor? No judgment, just pay attention and start to build that muscle that actually allows you to drop into your body. Thank you very much for listening. I really do appreciate it. Have a great day. Thank you.